What's her Thanksgiving song?
No.
Pass.
No.
The cranberry sauce. We're having mashed potatoes. Ooh, the turkey looks great.
Len.
Thank you for loving me.
Len.
Thank you for being there.
Oh, God.
Everyone's thanking.
Len.
The whole world's thanking you.
Stop.
Thanking
Len.
Us for thanking
Stop.
You.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Pass. No. The cranberry sauce. We're having mashed potatoes. Oh, the turkey looks great. Thank you for loving me.
Len.
Thank you for being there.
Please.
Thank you for loving me. Everyone's thanking. The whole
Len.
World's thanking you. Thanking
Stop.
Us for thanking you.
Hillbilly wants to know. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, we talked about this sort of... We talked about the Göbekli Tepe, but he wants to know about the monolithic cultures, you know, Stonehenge, Newgrange. Do you think this connects? How does this all connect? How does that, connect to what we've been talking about, seafaring races? I think that really the seafaring cultures are the ones that sort of, like you were saying here about, they get to places first. I think that's what it is. I think it's like the first real culture we had was on the sea, in a sense, maybe.
These are the guys that I'm calling the Indo-Europeans. This is another one of those blind spots. See, there are some people that just, it's actually reached the point now where you'll find a handful of scholars who try to deny that there were even Indo-Europeans, that there was actually a culture that was the Indo-Europeans. And I just look at them like they're idiots. Mm. Think, dude, we have traces of them all over the damn world. We have the language. We have remnants of them. They were all the hell over the place. They were the dominant culture. Wherever they went, they were the dominant culture. These are the guys that I at least credit with building the megaliths. I think they were behind all of them. Whether that was one specific culture in antiquity or a number of cultures that picked up the knowledge of how to do it from them, I'm not sure how close that was. My guess is that the original Indo-Europeans were the guys that came from upstairs. They came from not this world. And we carried on their tradition for as long as we could remember it. We either lost it during a catastrophe, or we just lost it over superstition and laziness over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are the guys I call the Indo-Europeans. They're the ones I credit with building all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. I think that explains what he's asking for there. I lost my train of thought here while I was listening to your answer. But so, yeah. So really, there's no more pirates in the sense like the old style. Now they're like criminals. Now they're like, they don't, there's no sort of,
there's no honor among thieves anymore.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was looking to say. Good job there, Bruce.
Yep.
Yes.
These guys appear mercenaries now. There were mercenaries even in the days of Golden Age pirates, make no mistake about it. But the majority of them were the Brethren of the Coast.
Hmm.
Any of the ones that styled themselves as Brethren of the Coast were not those kind of pirates. They were completely different. That kind, they're completely gone now. We've got nothing but mercenaries.
Now, what about other culture? Now, you talked about the Golden Age pirates, but what about other? Because clearly other sort of cultures had pirates. Like, were there Asian pirates? Were there, I presume there were. Were there, like, African pirates? I mean, what was there? Do you know anything about those sort of different types of pirates?
The Barbary pirates, or the original corsairs, were Berbers from the North African coast, mostly. And, yeah, they were very, very heavily into piracy. That's in the ancient world. They were quite the power in their day. These were, as a matter of fact, they captured Julius Caesar and ransomed him back. He repaid them. He told them he was going to come back and kill him, and he did. He crucified all of them. Julius Caesar was a real bastard. But, yeah, that's the Barbary pirates, the Berbers. Now, the Asians had a lot of piracy. As a matter of fact, one of the most famous pirate captains, speaking of female pirates, one of the most famous pirates ever was an Asian lady pirate. And I can't think of her name now, because they were never my specialty, but I do remember reading quite a bit about her.
And what did she do, an Asian lady pirate? What did she do?
Same thing all pirates did. She grabbed a lot of shipping. She recruited a hell of a lot of people to sail alongside her. And she had a bit of a pirate fleet. And she kind of ruled the waters where she was for a long time.
That's impressive. That's pretty impressive. So when they took these boats, like would they all sail together like an armada of boats they stole? I'm not just talking about the lady pirate here. I just mean pirates in general.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Because it would seem, I don't know if that would be an advantage or a disadvantage to have a bunch of ships. I guess it would be an advantage because you could circle up on one ship, but...
depended on your target.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you did want secrecy and you did want stealth. Most ships, you're going to go up to them and try and bamboozle them. If you're going after a really impressive target, like one of the Mughal ships, one of the Ottoman ships, then you want to go with an armada because they are going to shoot at you and they're going to do some damage. They didn't do that too often for exactly that reason. It was very, very risky, extremely dangerous.
Mm. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Then they could just stash their other boats at pirate safe havens.
There was a famous Irish woman pirate, too, and I can't think of her name now. She was actually pardoned and hired by Queen Elizabeth because she was too effective against English shipping. They captured her, and she considered that she would probably be a better ally than an enemy, so that she actually sprung her and said, look, quit attacking English shipping, and well, let's go back in business.
Here's an interesting thought. Where are there American pirates? Because, you know, you would think maybe there might be, but I don't know of any famous American pirates.
I don't know any famous ones, but there were absolutely American pirates, no question about it. There were American Indian pirates. Now, we don't know their names, really, but there were American Indians who sailed among them, a few.
Hmm.
They just liked them. They were
right.
Treated well. They were good traders. They liked seeing new places, and they just sailed with them.
Well, it's interesting, though, that, you know, it's like you have this golden age of pirates. You would think that there would be like an upsurge or an era of piracy along sort of the coast of America. And from what I understand, I guess you don't really.
There were, but they were mostly English pirates.
Yeah.
You have to bear in mind we were, you know, not really America as a nation yet. We were still colonies.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there were a lot of American pirates that were just, they were Englishmen still, or considered Englishmen, or Dutch, or what have you.
Mm. Jim Vujovic, I always mess up his name. He'll get me in the chat. Jim Vujovic wants to know if Bruce has an opinion on the Vikings navigating far enough inland to have left the Kensington Runestone.
I know exactly what he's talking about. I can't tell you whether the Kensington Runestone is legitimate or not. That's something that I'd have to leave to the forensic analysis, which I haven't done enough of. I've read arguments pro and con on it. It could be a fraud for someone who just wanted some publicity. I don't think that's the case. It could also have been a fraud just by someone who likes pulling jokes and wanted to see how far it would go.
Yeah.
Or it might actually be legitimate. I'm really not sure. Okay. There I'd want to talk to a few experts on the subject and have them really analyze it and come up with something on it. So I can't say whether it's legitimate or not. It's a question mark.
Right.
I do not find it difficult to believe that they came that far inland. I'm reasonably sure that they did. Vikings were pretty good explorers, and man, were they rangy. They went all over the world. They were just like Celts. They were all over the damn world. The Vikings had tremendous influence on history. They essentially found the original Russian throne, the throne of the Ruriks. That was done by three Swedish brothers. They were Rus. Rus is oarsmen.
Mm.
It was Norse for oarsmen. What happened was the Russian peasants, who were tired of being picked on by the Mongols and everybody else, basically came up to three Swedes and said, hey, man, we would like you guys to create a country for us. Could you, like, you know, start us out? And while you're at it, could you knock up a lot of our women? Because you see what we've got here. And you guys come from pretty good stock. And they said, sure, no problem. Within the space of about 10 years, two of them died, one of them lived, and they established the throne of Rurik, which stood for about 1,000 years.
Wow.
Probably the longest standing throne in history, until the Romanovs actually supplanted it very briefly.
Hmm. Weird. Interesting. Now, Hillbilly, who we've dubbed co-host for the evening, he's starting to let it get to his head, I think. He wants to know, what is a swash and how do you buckle it? Do you know anything about the history of that foolishness?
Yes, I do.
What is that? So now everyone can have something to throw out there at their Thanksgiving meal today. They can say,
yep.
They can explain the swashbuckle. So what is a swash and how do you buckle it? Well done, Hillbilly. I take back my critique.
Your buckle is your shield. If you swash it, you take your sword and you rush it up and down and go, bang, 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 bang. It's a way of saying, come out and fight. That's swashbuckling.
Interesting. So you just smack your shield with your sword?
You just run your sword up and down it and smack it and make a lot of noise and run up and down the street saying, come out and fight me, you coward.
Where?
I'm trying to think of swashbuckler. They're just begging for trouble.
Well, clearly they're smacking their shield with their sword.
Yep.
I mean, you don't want to, you know, even to right now, especially you wouldn't want to deal with anyone doing that. Even back then, it's So that was sort of an intimidation tactic almost.
Yep. That's someone advertising they're an asshole and they want to fight.
Nice. All right.
The term freebooter, by the way, is Dutch. It basically means pirate, but it's an actual Dutch word, freebooter.
Freebooter?
Yep.
I don't know if I've heard that one before.
It's a Dutch word. It's a word that's frequently associated with pirates. They're called freebooters. And it's because it's a Dutch word for them.
Interesting. Where did that whole ridiculous parrot thing come from? Do we know anything about that, or is that just...
Parrots?
Yeah.
They love
know.
Parrots.
Okay.
They love parrots. As a matter of fact, pirate ships were frequently floating menageries. They had animals of all kinds there. A lot of them they'd eat, but they collected a lot of animals too. Monkeys, parrots, they were crazy about parrots.
Really? Monkeys too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They just had like a monkey. I could see that. You'd have if I was a pirate, I would have a monkey running around on the ship if you could.
Oh, absolutely. They love animals.
Yeah.
Look, life at sea is pretty damn dull and pretty damn violent most of the time. So you did everything you could to make it pleasant. And that's why you liked having musicians and singing a lot of songs. And having animals around, all the nicer. Just more fun.
Did they keep... Now, I feel there's no real like politically correct way to say this. So, for all the youngsters out there, trigger warning. But did they like keep women on the ship? Because it seems like it would be very, I don't know, counterintuitive, I guess, to be out there for, months on end, just all these dudes.
They held the same superstition that all sailors do, which is that women are bad luck on ships.
Ah, okay. All right.
They went on shore and got hookers.
Okay, so it wasn't like a society on these ships, in a sense. So what I'm thinking, too, is like, didn't any of these dudes ever get married or something? But Jim points out that these women were bad luck. But yeah, so they would just get married and they'd leave them on shore and shit, yeah.
Sure. A lot of them they hooked up with island women, and there were a lot of bastard kids of pirates all over the islands.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure there are a lot of descendants on the islands today that were fathered by pirates originally. So that was really common. And sometimes they take wives. Even several.
Yeah. Okay.
One in every port, so to speak. When it came to places like Nassau, there were lots of women in Nassau. And some of them would have been pirates' women. And I imagine a few of them probably even sailed with the pirates, like I said, just doing the same thing that Anne Bonny did or Mary Read, but disguising it better.
Oh, okay. So that makes more sense now, too, where if it was like women are bad luck, they would have to disguise themselves, too, because they would have to suffer for the urban legend, old wives' tale thing. Yeah, interesting.
Well, it would be very bad luck if you happened to be the only woman on board a pirate ship, unless you really wanted to be raped a lot.
Clearly, yeah. That was where the trigger warning came from. So,
exactly.
Were there? I'm sure this is the case. But Jim wants to know if there were any pirates who retired rich and happy. I guess I'm sure some knew to get out when the time was right. Right.
A lot of them did. One of them, as a matter of fact, from the Witta. When the Witta went down, he had left the ship earlier and just remained on shore. When the Witta went down, he was one of the ones who smoothed the way out for a couple of the pirates. He was able to get clemency for a couple of them. He'd been a pirate himself. He'd actually sailed with them at one point.
Yeah.
But he retired, and he was quite rich. Henry Avery retired rich. He's one of the most famous pirates, one of the first. And, he was extremely wealthy. He became respectable. He just took his riches and bought himself a nice estate and said, hey, I'm fat and happy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. Some are smart enough to smarten up. Now this is what happens, though. When you open up the can of worms, then they start hitting me with a million questions. But Hillbilly wants to know, how did it come to be a captain could perform marriages? I just assume, I've never even heard that before, but I would just assume that because he's like the boss of the sea.
Yep, all captains can perform marriages at sea. It's a given. I do not know where that originated. I got to be honest with you. But yeah, it's always been a tradition. All captains can perform a marriage at sea.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to take a pause on Hillbilly's questions because he's getting crazed. So we'll take a moment here to mock my friend. Because his name is Joe V. He's one of the original writers for Banal of America. And every year, he's obsessed with Bruce. We've talked about this on the show before. I'm concerned for Bruce's health and safety. That's why I try to keep Joe V as far away from Bruce as possible. But he wrote to me, as soon as I announced the Rucksgiving special pirate theme, he writes to me, a pirate-themed Rucksgiving? WTF? ! I won't have any questions for that! So he's all fired up. So then I said, well, since part of the Rucksgiving tradition is me mocking you during the program, I've decided to allow you one non-pirate question. Not one question with three clauses, one question, okay? So then he writes back and manages to, he writes back this afternoon and manages to hit four questions in these two paragraphs. So they're completely non-pirate related, but we'll get into them here because they're funny. In my mind, yeah. So Joe V, his annual.
I'm just hanging, man. I'm sitting drinking Guinness. I'm just hanging, man.
Oh no, I know. It's nice. Well, this is part of this is part of the tradition. We're kind of nearing the end of the special here. We got to rib Joe V a little bit. So here's his letter to Bruce, folks. I'm gonna read it, but it reads like a letter to Santa Claus. That's why I like it so much. It's like fawning in a childlike way. I'm amused. He says, well, since I've finally become part of someone's holiday tradition, here we go, although it is more slice of life type of stuff. In the 1990s, Colorado had a pretty strong reputation for lots of interesting things related to the esoteric. Spirituality, Native American spirituality, UFOs, alternative history, paranormal, the whole nine yards. Even the late Michael Corbin broadcasted his Paranet Continuum out of the state. You name it. And us sorry sods in the Northeast U.S. were assured Colorado had it in spades. Looking back on it now, what was this true from your experience?
Well, I have to think about that for a second.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll finish the thing in a sense, because now that I see it, he's just kind of restating the question. Was this true from your experience? Was Colorado in the midst of a brief esoteric renaissance in the 90s? If so, what were some of your favorite moments, locations, and persons? And overall, how do you think the esoteric world has weathered the last 15 years? So I don't know, that's three questions right there, even though he restated one twice. But
that's not a bad question, and it clarifies nicely.
Yeah, no, I know. It's all in jest. He knows that. So, and it is a very good question because I do love this sort of sociological aspect of things. And you were there in Colorado. It still has sort of an esoteric cachet, I feel. But what was it like for you back in the day in the 90s? Did you kind of have that resonance that you were in the midst of something?
I have to tell you the truth. In the 90s, I felt that I was the resonance in the midst of it. I attracted a hell of a lot of people. They came out of the woodwork. I got to meet all kinds of people, especially from esoteric brotherhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And we had very fascinating conversations, a lot like we're having right now, only even more spirited and much farther reaching. I still have friendships with a lot of those people. I wouldn't say that we were any kind of recognized movement or anything like that, but certainly where we were hanging out, we had a lot of people that were into esoteric stuff, and we talked quite a bit about it. It was a pretty big circle of people.
Nice. Okay. And how has it, he says, you know, how has it changed in the last, did it sort of die out, or was it sort of like, people, well, the internet changed everything. I think that's the answer.
The internet changed everything is the answer. That is exactly correct. I don't know how much of it is actually centered in Colorado or takes place here anymore. We did have some interesting stuff going on back in the 90s. Some of it just kind of fizzled. We had some flashes in the pan. Stephen Greer was kind of one of those. He was doing the whole Disclosure Project, and it really just comes off more as a big publicity stunt when all is said and done. And
right.
It doesn't help. It's actually kind of harmful to the movement itself.
Yeah.
So we had a little bit of that. And I'm not even faulting Stephen Greer. I don't know how much of that was just a publicity stunt or how much he was just not very smart and counterproductively doing what he was doing.
Hmm.
But in any event, we did have a little bit of that was taking place. But mostly, I just knew a lot of people that were into the esoteric. And it was a very broad number of subjects on the esoteric. We talked about just everything. And I don't know how many of those people went on to their own websites, or I imagine that they all just kind of went to the internet and carried on there. The internet is where everything takes place anymore.
Yeah, nobody meets anymore.
Yeah, nobody meets anymore. It's very sad. And I've noticed that too. That started to change in the early 2000s. About, I don't know, 13, 14 years ago, it just kind of fizzled. People didn't come out anymore.
Yeah. Well, they got all excited because they could go anywhere in the world on their little internet. So it was like, why should I go down to the coffee shop? I'm looking at pictures of the Sphinx that I couldn't
see. Well, part
of
it, too, yeah. we had the smoking ban, I think in like 2002, the public smoking ban, and that literally killed the coffee shops. It killed them.
Yeah.
They have never recovered from it. They're just ghost towns anymore.
Well, what's the pot smoking situation then? Can you go to a place and smoke? So you can go to a place and smoke weed and you can't? Or can you buy, do you just buy the weed and you go home and smoke it?
You buy it and go home and smoke it.
Oh, they don't have like places you can all sit around and get stoned together like in Amsterdam?
You know, they probably do. There's a provision in the, I haven't come across them. There is a provision in the anti-smoking law that if X percentage of your profits comes from selling tobacco-related products, and it's a very high percentage. But if it comes from that, then you can smoke in those establishments.
Okay, so like if you have a cigar shop, you can have a little.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So my guess is that they probably do have some shops here and there that I just don't know about, where they sell or they carry a lot of cigars and cigarettes just so they could get past that and have people come in and smoke pot.
Yeah. Interesting. Have you noticed much change there since the marijuana law? It's really kind of taken, you know, it's the you know, the newness of it's kind of gone. So have you noticed any sort of sociological change to the environment, you know, to society there since they enacted it? It's kind of like the guinea pig test case for the rest of the country. So
that's exactly what it is. And everyone's kind of watching it very carefully on account of that.
Hmm.
It's an extremely successful. There are two things I can tell you straight off the bat about it. One, it's the best accounted for business in the state. I know someone who works taxes, and he said, these guys have always got their taxes perfect. They never try and slide anything. They're just model textbook citizens when it comes to that.
Right, right.
And I believe him.
Yeah, you don't want that kind of trouble. Yeah.
Yeah, straight up. Said, these guys are the best businessmen you're going to come across. And they're totally honest with you. The other thing, if there's a sociological thing that I've noticed, it's this. And I noticed this on the same day that someone mentioned it on the radio, so I busted up. I noticed a lot of people driving really slow on the roads. I had no sooner, I was in my car noticing it, and I noticed this for a few days, and I was just thinking, man, why are all these people driving so slow? And as I was thinking that, I was listening to a radio station, and the DJs were talking about the same thing, and they said, you know what it is? It's the pot. Everyone, when they smoke pot, they don't drive faster. They all drive slow because they don't want to get pulled over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's the – is there more or less accidents? I'm wondering about that because I'm sure people might be concerned.
I don't know.
That. You don't know?
I don't know. I'm curious about that myself.
Yeah, yeah. Someone should look that up and tell us. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I think they're trying to do it here in Massachusetts. So I think they'll eventually just do it everywhere. This seems like one of those things that's like – it just takes forever, but you know what's going to happen, you know? So they just hurry up and do it.
I'm glad they did it. I'd wanted them to do it for ages, primarily just for tax purposes and for commerce. It's like,
exactly.
Dude, we are bankrupting ourselves with all these illegal wars we're throwing everywhere, and what do you do for commerce? Well, you legalize pot and you tax the crap out of it, and damn, it works. Which is why that the feds finally can let us enact the thing that we had voted in for well over a decade before that. It was always coming up in every ballot, should be legalized pot. And every single time, overwhelmingly, the vote was yes. And every single time, it wouldn't pass because the feds would step in and say, you can't, it's illegal.
Yeah.
And then finally, they just didn't. And that's because they were using it as sort of a pilot program, seeing how it flies. It's flying really well, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I think it'll happen eventually. Plus, you talk about the, you know, the powers that be and everything, and they want to keep people like checked out on society and everything. It's like a double, you know, it's a double whammy. It's a double dip. They get to tax these people while also sort of letting them get stoned and not care about shit so they can do other stuff we don't like, you know? So
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You want to keep your populace fat and happy, or at least stupid.
Exactly.
And, they do a pretty good job of it.
Well, we've got about 15 minutes left. I know you. We can go a little bit over, right? You don't care about that.
Oh, yeah, I have no problem at all.
Yeah, I figured it.
I'm amazed we're doing this well. I was afraid we were going to choke.
Oh, no way, man. We, you know, if anything, I've sort of stalled out a few times because I'm a little bit out of rhythm because it's been almost a month since I've done a show. But no.
You're doing fine.
Awesome, man. Thanks. There's plenty to talk about. Well, that's the thing. There's plenty to talk about with these pirates. Is there anything that we left out here that, you know, I should have mentioned or you had on your mind that hasn't come up yet with regards to the pirates? Because I want to start talking about some other stuff with you, like I just did. Oh, actually, oh yeah, well, let's finish that. Are we ready to move on from pirates?
Sure. We can move on whatever you want to.
Okay.
One thing I was going to mention,
yeah.
the reason that I see a similarity in these, what I call the Indo-European seafaring nations,
mm-hmm.
Is because of these massive similarities in their cultures. For instance, not only are the ships very similar, but these guys all have the same customs. I mean, the idea of Vikings burning their dead at sea, if they actually did that, we don't have any record of it. The real problem with a lot of these nations, all of them, in fact, is they just didn't leave us any written history.
Right, right.
None of the Norse started writing their history down until they became Christianized, and they didn't become Christianized until after 1000 AD, right about that time. There was kind of a civil war that took place between a lot of them for 100 or 200 years or so while they were all Christianizing and getting rid of the old gods. But they didn't write down their history until then, and neither did the Celts. They just didn't write anything down. So we have to speculate about a lot of stuff. But archaeologically, we know that these guys buried their wealthy with their ships. That was done with the Celts. It was done with the Norse. The Egyptians did it too.
Hmm.
The Egyptians actually buried a full ship next to the pyramid and next to the necropolis in Giza. That was discovered, I don't remember what year it was. There was this pit, and they dug it up, and there was all this wood in it, and it was curved, and it looked like it belongs to something, but they didn't know what. So for a couple of years, somebody fiddled with it, and they finally realized that it was a ship. It was just disassembled. And they put the ship together, and the thing is seaworthy.
Wow.
You tar it, it's in a museum now. You tar it, and you can take that thing sailing. Well, the Norse buried their dead with ships, too. The Celts did it. I'm not sure if the Celts buried them with ships. I think they did. In any event, we just wouldn't recognize it because it's all rotted. In any event, they buried their dead with their wealth, and they also had voluntary slaves or servants that would sometimes go with them to the afterlife.
Jeez.
They would volunteer to be sacrificed and go with them. You find that in Egypt. You find that in the Norse lands. You find that in Germany. You find it in the Celts. It's just a massive similarity between these cultures. That's why I don't think that they're all separate and that they, at the very least, had a great deal of commerce with each other all the way back into antiquity if they didn't spring from the same root.
Interesting. Okay. Hillbilly wants to know, this will be our last pirate thing, what about the horns on the helmet? What's the story with that?
That's the Celts. That's a very, very common misunderstanding. Well, everyone thinks that the Norse had the horns on the helmets. It was only the Celts that had horns on the helmets. Although the Norse and the Germans especially would sometimes put antlers on them. The Germans like to put antlers on their helmets. The Norse and the Germans are very, very, very similar.
Hmm.
And the Germans, as a matter of fact, would sometimes wear entire animal heads. And the Norse would partly do that, too. They put a wolf head over their own,
oh, yeah.
Or a bear head or a boar head or what have you.
Yeah, scare them.
I like to think of my ancestors going around all painted black and, you know, looking like Conan the Barbarian wearing heads.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, this Indo-European culture, they were all headhunters, too. They all collected heads. The Norse did it, the Celts did it, they all did it.
Hmm, interesting. All right. Well, that leaves us behind on the pirates. Thank you, dude, for, you know, bringing us all this pirate knowledge tonight, because I didn't know anything about pirates. Now I've learned a lot. So it was.
Well, I'm more than happy to. I keep threatening to write a book about it one of these days, but there's no money in it.
I know. You've said that before. Now I have to, because I will get inundated with an email from poor Joe V. Because he also I'm not done yet with Joe V's question. He says this is where it turns into the letter to Santa Claus. As always, I'll be enjoying something by the time this airs. Probably red wine, actually. The beer in New England is so-so. People in the Boston area will swear up and down about how good Sam Adams is. But yeah, I mean, compared to Bud Light, it is good. Shed Mountain Ale out of Vermont is actually very good. One of the few top-of-the-line brews we have out here. Of course, I've always heard good things about the beer in your neck of the woods. How is the independent... Yeah, let me finish this, guys. Crazy.
Yes, yes.
How is the independent craft brewery scene out in Colorado? We get some of the left-hand beers out here. I'm not sure what else we get from you guys. I have a friend who swears by Avery's Maharaja. Ever tried it? That's it. That's
we
the,
have.
That's the, I had to finish that. Yeah. So what's this guy talking about?
We have the best and most numerous independent breweries in the country and possibly in the world in Colorado. That's no joke. My housemates buy from them all the time. My favorite of the bunch is Dry Dock, which is not very far from me. They make a thing called Wee Heavy that is the most delicious beer I've ever had in my entire life. In fact, I'd be drinking it right now if I could just find a store nearby that sold it. That's why I'm drinking Guinness, right? I love Guinness, too. But when I have my druthers, I go for the Wee Heavy from Dry Dock. We have a number of them out here. I can't remember the names of all of them, but I'm sampling them all the time. And
yeah.
Most of them are very, very good. The one that you named specifically sounds like, I could be mistaken on this, it sounds like an Indian Pale Ale. I don't like Indian Pale Ales. They're too hoppy for me, and they give me bile.
Me too. I hate Indian Pale Ales.
Yeah, I can't stand them. And
they're way too
really,
popular now. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. They have a super bitter aftertaste.
Oh, they're the worst. They're the worst, yeah. I got into a big, well, not an argument, but, yeah, I had to formally complain to my local liquor store because it's like all they have is IPAs. I'm like, enough of these things, dude. They're awful.
Yeah, I sampled one of those, and it's like, oh, man, that was really hard to get through.
Right, right.
I'm usually a stout guy. As a matter of fact, I do have to say this. I love Sam Adams. It's one of my favorite breweries. I can't remember ever having an Adams beer that I didn't like. But ordinarily, I tend towards stouts. I'll drink the occasional lager. I drink some Sempaly Girl. And I just love stouts. But I'll drink just about anything.
Mm.
But our breweries out here, we have fantastic breweries out here.
Yeah.
And I've only in the last few months really been learning who they are and becoming aware of them and sampling their goods. And what I've sampled is good.
Nice.
Except for the Indian Pale Ale.
Yeah, I don't get it myself, the Indian Pale Ale, but it's popular, you know. I don't get it, but people really it's really hip right now. So you talked about how about one more? I got another idea here. This isn't Pirates but something we always talk about on the show. It seems like every time we get you on the show, we get an update on the marijuana laws in Colorado. And we also, I guess this year, we can kind of close the book on this James Holmes guy. It sounds like, is he going to try and appeal this, or are they just going to send him to jail forever? Or has he given, you know, because last I heard, I believe this year, he was found guilty for like a million crimes and, you know, sentenced to 3,000
years in jail. Oh, yeah, they got him on everything.
Yeah. So he's like completely, you know, he's done. I have two questions, because this is, I presume you followed the trial. I hope someone writes a book about it, because, like, I'm sure there was a lot of interesting sort of revelations that came out during the trial. Was there anything that came out during the trial that you thought was particularly interesting?
Well, I got to tell you, I was disappointed with the transparency of the trial. I expected it to be much, much more available than it was. You had to kind of just go on to, you had to go onto your computer and log into, like, the news channels in order to get any real news on it from the trial itself. What disappointed me, I mean, obviously they were trying to nail Holmes, and I'm certain that Holmes was up to his eyebrows and well beyond in all of this stuff. But I have never believed that he acted alone. There were other people involved in it, and of course the trial wasn't dealing with that. But I really wanted a lot of that stuff to come out. I'm with you. I want someone to really write a book on this. I want much more information than I got. I don't have any doubt that they got the right guy. But they only got one of the right guys. I'm certain that there were other people involved in this.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean you're certain? You're just certain sort of like on a gut level. You don't like this. Is there anything that you think stands out just that he was so you know, well-versed in the, you know, in the explosives and shit?
Yep. That's exactly it. So how the hell did this guy wire his place? That place was wired to take out the entire block. It would have taken out the entire block, and the neighboring blocks would have caught on fire.
But he was a super genius, though. Couldn't he have just, like, spent some time learning that shit because he had no, because he was obsessed and a super genius?
Dude, this guy is a schizophrenic. I don't know any schizophrenic that could possibly think that well through.
Yeah.
Not any. Somebody helped him with this shit.
Well, we'll definitely never find out then, dude.
We will definitely never find out, and the closest we will come, I'll tell you exactly what I think happened. I think law enforcement knows all about it. They decided to go after Holmes because Holmes was definitely involved, and he was the guy they could nail, and that brought some closure to it. What I think actually happened was an event-level attack. I think it was something like Columbine. I actually believe it was something state-sponsored, and that's why we'll never hear about it. They're going to keep the lid on it super, super tight. They'll be going at it as well as they possibly can behind the scenes, and I have faith in them in that. I believe they will do a very good job, but I would like to know about it.
What do you mean with state-sponsored? Like it was a foreign attack, or it was like a false flag? They were going to set up a false flag attack?
Either or. The point is that I believe that there was some other, I believe some government was involved in it.
And he's just a patsy, kind of.
Yes, it was sponsored. He wasn't entirely a patsy. He knew. He was involved in it. He was part of it.
Why doesn't he say anything? Or if he has, they just don't, like, how would we know, right? Because it's not like I can call ABC and be like, I'm going to blow the whistle on the people that, you know, I worked with on this. Because no one, they'd be like, shut up, and beat him with a baton, throw him back in his jail cell, right?
How would we know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty, yeah, yeah. Well, the whole thing is, like, really strange in a way, too, where you see, like, somebody that, it's like, I wish someone, you almost wish, like, someone would interview him in a sense, just because he's so fucking mysterious, you know what I mean? I've never even heard the dude talk, so, except for that one presentation they had, like, on YouTube. But it's like, you know, it would, he's entirely dependent sort of on the portrayal in the media. So it's like, what is this dude's deal? You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is like getting a Titanic story without the iceberg. Yeah, the Titanic went down, and we know it hit something. We got to talk about the iceberg. There's just more to this story than we know. When they hit his apartment the next morning, I watched this as it was happening. I had just gotten back. The police had just driven me home from where we all gave our reports to the FBI and Homeland Security and everyone else. I turned on the TV, and the first thing I see are all the FBI specialists at this guy's apartment. We've got the live feed coming in, and these guys are getting right on the airwaves and saying, man, this place is the most wired place I have ever seen. I'm the expert in this stuff. Yeah. I have never seen anything this advanced. He's just saying that straight up. That tells me everything I need to know. I do not believe that some guy on the street, I don't care how bright he was that well connected that he got this stuff and was able to hook it up in a way that the best FBI experts had never seen it before. And man, did they have to really, really be careful taking that thing apart.
Yeah. Interesting. Weird. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you just don't know. It's odd. I don't know anyone who really is like, I'm sure there's conspiracy people who are digging into this, but I don't know anyone who's sort of putting out any theory on this, you know? So
I don't either. I don't have one of my own.
Because the dude is such a cipher that it's like impossible. Like, I don't know who the fuck his friends were or anything like that. I don't know how you would even go about trying to find that out. So it's like, it's very, very difficult to try and get to the bottom of, you know?
I don't have a theory of my own. The only theory I've got is other people were involved. And if other people were involved, they were very well connected to whoever the hell they were.
Yeah.
But that's the only theory I've got. I can't tell you who. I don't know who would have sponsored it, who would have been responsible. I do believe it was sponsored.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting case. It's an interesting case. I don't know. I think, like I said just now when I said we were closing the book on it, and how I don't think we'll ever really know. I think it's just going to be like sort of put back into the bookshelf, if you will. You know what I mean? It's like we're never really, no one's going to really dig much more into it, unfortunately. I hope someone does, but
I really hope someone does.
Yeah.
This is a case that I really, really want to read a book about. Very well-researched book.
Mm. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Someone needs to, like, talk to that dude's girlfriend. He had a girlfriend, so if anyone would know anything, maybe she would, but who knows? She's been gone.
The guy was 50 different kinds of fucked up. I don't doubt that. But I don't believe that a guy that screwed up could have done this. Not alone.
Yeah. Have you, Jim asks me this. I'm about to answer him. I'll just say it, actually. That way I don't have to type it. But he asks, have you seen, hold on, let me look at the time we have left here so I can just, like, have a clean good night to the live listeners. Yeah, we got like a minute and a half, so we'll here's what we'll do. We'll say goodnight to the live listeners and then just go right into the after chat so the people who are listening live have a good cliffhanger. Well, thank you, obviously, to all the live listeners. Thanks to Hillbilly and Jim Vujovic for the fantastic questions. Hillbilly really, especially, he was just firing away with questions. And we're going to keep talking, Bruce, but thank you again for coming on for Ruxgiving and happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Oh, absolutely. You too. And everybody.
All right. There you go. Thanks to all the live listeners. Thanks to the folks in the chat room. Now, the question here, as we got a minute left, the cliffhanger. Jim Vujovic wants to know what you think of – have you seen this whole crisis actor theory that people are promulgating, the conspiracy realm? They say that, like, these crisis actors are – they're on all the news when these things happen and these things aren't really actually happening, you know, like Sandy Hook and all these other and
– Yes, I am familiar with that.
I hate that whole conspiracy theory. That's why I just can't get on board with the whole crisis actor idea. But what do you think of that whole idea? Because you actually come from the world of acting and entertainment and that sort of thing, so you might have a unique perspective.
Well, I have a problem believing that this is one of the reasons I'd prefer better transparency in the trial. I have difficulty believing that we could come up with a bunch of dead bodies, you know?
Right, exactly. That's what always trips me up. It's like, dude, all these kids died. Like, these parents aren't making it up. So, yeah.
Exactly. The one thing I do have to say on that, I have to admit this straight up, we did not see or hear a damn thing. We didn't see a drop of blood. Nothing. I do have to say that. But I do believe that something happened there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very weird. Yeah. So I don't get why I don't get that whole crisis actor thing. I find it completely unbelievable. And then people post pictures like where they show, oh, this was a person was a witness to this, and then this person was a witness to that, and it's the same person. It's like I don't know. You know, it may happen like 1 out of 100. You know, there may be some people that they sort of plant as government people to be witnesses, but it's like, if they're going to go through all that trouble, dude, they're not going to make a simple mistake by, like, bringing the same person out, you know, as a witness to 3 different shootings. Like, they're not going to make that. If it's that elaborate a conspiracy, they're not going to make that simple a mistake, I think.
Well, that's just it. I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bath. I do have to say that I'm pretty convinced a lot of people got killed.
Right, exactly. Now, I have here scribbled on my notes, scribbled on a piece of paper because I didn't want to forget it while we were talking on the show. Have you been following this new thing with the pyramid and the sonar or whatever they're using, sound thing? They found something new in the pyramid, right? Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have.
What's the story with that? Translate it for us who don't follow the pyramid. You're my pyramid expert, so what's the story?
What they found is what appears to be some kind of chamber at ground level, I believe on the east side of the pyramid. I'm very interested in finding out what that is. What that means is there's a hollow area behind it, and they need to get to that hollow area. That's going to take a while for them to smooth through, but I'll be very interested in seeing what they come up with on it.
Yeah. Do you have any theory on what it might be?
Really good question. There's been absolutely nothing else found in the pyramid, really. I mean, there are no grave cerements or anything like that, no treasure, no artifacts. Well, very, very few artifacts. There are a couple of things that were found way back. There was a copper hook and ball, which have kind of been forgotten and have disappeared from the museum, actually. But there were a couple of very small items that were found in the pyramid, but they appear to have been intrusive at a later date. The point is that there's just nothing in the pyramid. So I'm imagining they'll probably find just a kind of an empty hollow there, but I'm interested in finding out what is in that empty hollow.
Right, right. Yeah, because presumably the pyramids are so old. Like, presumably all the shit we're finding now, someone else in antiquity knew about. Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, clearly, if there was anything like a super golden awesome thing, like, someone already got it.
If there was anything there, it was gone, but it's difficult to imagine there was anything there. because we know when it was broken into, and they would have reported it. They went to an awful lot of trouble to break into that pyramid, and when they didn't find anything, they were pretty disappointed.
Yeah. What do you think of the whole idea of Edgar Cayce and the Hall of Records under the Sphinx paw? Have you looked at that whole idea?
There's something under the Sphinx's paw, I can tell you that. You can see from the air, in aerial photographs, there's a depression that looks like a corridor that stretches from the rump of the Sphinx all the way to the front of the pyramid. There's a corridor down there. I'm certain there's a corridor down there. There's difficult to explain any other reason why there would be that depression that you can see from the air otherwise. So, yeah, let's find out what's under there.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. Well, like I said, though, if there is anything cool there, they, you know, I would hope it would suck if they fuck, if, excuse me, it would suck if they went into the, if they, you know, if they found the where the Hall of Records should be under the paw and, like, went in there and it was empty. You know what I mean? Because, like, I wish there were, like,
Phone's vault.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's going to be like, you know? I wish there was, like, cool stuff they could still find in the pyramids, but, like, I'm thinking as we talk, and like I said, it's like, if there was a Hall of Records, like, you know, some other culture a long time ago probably took it, and they probably, like, broke it. Like, you know, they probably kept it in the library, and that got burned down when they were taken over, and no one knew, you know what I mean? So it's like, ah, geez.
Yeah. My guess, if there was anything there, is that it got moved a long time ago someplace else. That's just a guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's like, well, where is it now? We'll never know. You know, does it even exist anymore? We have no idea. It's very frustrating.
It's in that big warehouse with the Ark of the Covenant.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, man. So, I'm trying to think of what else is going on that I might want to. I'm still a little, I was kind of stupefied last year when you talked about this James Holmes thing. I'm still, I wish someone would look into it. If anyone out there is looking into this thing, let us know. Because Bruce
I
and I
very much want to know more.
Devour it. I got looked into it a lot last night, actually, because I was getting ready for our show, and I was like, what exactly do we know? Because, you know, we didn't really find much more out about this dude either, you know?
Just
like, the, you know, his girlfriend's name or something. It's sort of a loose timeline of him allegedly, like, going insane, you know what I mean? Where it's like, first he said he was going to kill people, and then we kind of started to think he would. But, you know.
Well, they definitely nailed one of the right guys. He was way involved.
Right.
And he probably is the guy that actually was the shooter. But, and I can't even be certain of that, but yeah, I think he was probably the shooter. In any event, I don't feel bad about his sentence.
He was way
involved
not.
In all this shit.
Yeah.
But I'm just certain that he was not alone.
Do you think, could they ever interview him? Or, like, could he ever, like, do an interview, you think? Or were they just not allowed? I don't know how the laws work on that kind of thing. Because he's young, dude. I mean, you'd think, like, when he turns, like, 50 or something, he'll have some perspective on all this. But who knows?
Well, this is not the first time something like this has happened. Remember, the John Lennon shooting was pretty much the same way.
Right, right.
And that, I do think, was kind of a patsy setup.
Mm.
I don't know exactly what took place there, but he was part of something.
Mm.
I don't believe the guy just acts alone.
Oh, you know something? You mentioned something. You just jogged my memory. I need to say this, too, actually, folks, because I hate to be a downer here on Ruxgiving, but as I mentioned on Banal of America on the Facebook page, I don't know if you're familiar with Dave McGowan, Bruce, but he's a researcher. He did a lot of work on Laurel Canyon and sort of a lot of, like, mind control type stuff, I believe. And we had him on Banal of America back in February to talk about his research into Laurel Canyon, and he passed away on Monday, and I wanted to make note of that and you know, just
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and just salute him for his work and hope that wherever he is now, he's getting some answers to all this stuff. So it's a real loss.
I'm sure he has a better vantage point than the rest of us.
Exactly. You know, that's why I'm always sad when people who, and it's scary how many people we've had on the show have passed away over the years, but it's you know, I always at least sort of take solace in that you know, if what we're all talking about here on this show is what we think we're talking about, then chances are you don't just die and get put in a box, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, I believe there's something after. I can't say exactly what. I don't know. I don't think any of us do. But, yeah, I believe there's something after.
Yeah. So, you know, condolences to Dave McGowan's family and everything. Tough time to lose somebody around the holidays. But, you know, thank you to him and Godspeed, man. So. So, yeah, like I said, I wanted to make sure I mentioned that because that was, you know, we just talked to him back in February. It's kind of spooky, but, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Have some friends.
Mm. Now, what about your books here? You said you teased sort of writing a pirate book. You should definitely do that, dude. People are crying out for the rucks, man. So they would devour a pirate book by you. But I know you're still sort of having a little difficulty making the transition to get the Kindle of the old books out, or at least to get some, you know, to get the old books reissued, right? What's the status on that?
I don't know where to go or what to do. I'm completely I'm ready to do it, but I've never self-published before, which is really what we're talking about. I just don't know anything at all about that world or who it is you should go with or for any of that. I don't even know where to look. I mean, there's Lulu, but every really talentless self-published author I know publishes on Lulu.
Right, right.
So, you know, I don't want to make myself unrespectable. I'm just completely at sea.
Yeah.
I really don't know where to go. I've been doing research, and I don't know where to go. There's a self-publishing house in Colorado that apparently has a pretty good reputation. So I'm kind of looking at them, but it's kind of path of least resistance. Since I don't know what to do, it just kind of languishes there.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, if anyone out there can help Bruce get this book get his old books republished, please do. Please do. Did you work through the issue of, like, the photos, or are you just going to not do the photos?
Well, the photos are not going to be an issue for the first book. And for the second book, it will not be difficult to replace the ones I will need to replace, I don't think. I have found some very good ones that will work.
Nice.
I'm just going to work on that. I'll work on issuing the first one first, and then I'll work out whatever I need to do with the second one to get that done.
There you go, yeah. Because last I checked, let's get a look here. Let's look on Amazon how much these books are going for. It's crazy. Let me see. Architects of the Underworld. Oh, well, there's one here for $2.08, so I stand corrected.
It goes through phases. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember a time when Hollywood versus the Aliens was going for over $500.
Yeah.
I said, dude, you're kidding. I would have gotten author's copies if I'd known that.
Well, yeah, someone snatched up a whole bunch, and now, yeah. So I guess you can get them, not too bad. It says used, though. I'm always weary about buying used ones, but these... Yeah, here we go. Yeah, here's a new one. $71, $75, $80, $103 for Architects of the Underworld by some dude. It's new. So
yeah, I would rather just get it re-released. It's much better that way.
Right.
I don't want people to have to, you know, spend their life savings just to pick up a damn book.
Who would think it's crazy. I guess if they, yeah, brand new unread copy in perfect condition, A+ customer service, they say. But $103, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I wouldn't pay that much for a book.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but especially when there's a used one for $2 on there. It's not even good business sense on the part of the, I guess if they sell one, they make out all right. So they just plan.
You can find it in a lot of libraries, actually. I know it's been in a lot of libraries.
Really? I'll have to check with my library, yeah. Well, that's a good thing.
Got an ISBN, so if they don't have it, they can actually get it, you know, on a loan for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they can get it sent by, like, the Lexington Library or something from my area, yeah. Do you still look at the UFO phenomenon at all anymore? I know you feel like you've already got it all wrapped up, but do you ever, like, does anything ever cross your path that you're like, oh, that's interesting, that fits in with what I've been looking at all these years, or that makes me change my opinion on things?
I haven't found anything that makes me change my opinion, which doesn't mean that I tune anything out.
Right, right.
I don't really look, but, you know, if something pops up in the news, then, yeah, I notice like anyone else does, but I don't really go looking for it.
Well, you must be happy. Well, I guess everybody who's in this thing, I think anybody who listens to the show and who kind of is a researcher in all this, we already all kind of were on board the water on Mars thing. So it's like they're just catching up with all of us. So.
Yeah. Hell, there are megaliths up there, for crying out loud.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm convinced that Sphinx face is the face of Ra. It just doesn't look like anything else to me. And what's his name? Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, came out and, well, this was on CNN, I think it was. This was a few years ago. He talked about the monolith on Phobos and showed it. He showed a picture of it. He said, look, this thing's artificial. And he was just that blunt. This is not a natural thing.
Yeah. Well, it makes you wonder, you know, it's like we talk about pirates here tonight. It's, you know, if you want to go one step beyond the sea, you have to go to the sky. So it's like maybe that's the...
They kind of go together, don't they?
Yeah.
You sail know. Through space.
Yeah, they sail through space. So it's probably this, probably like, that's probably, you know, like how they, how like, you ever seen that thing, the animation where it like goes... It goes, like, from far out in the universe and then zooms into, like, Earth all the way down to, like, a cell. And it's, like, amazing the actual how close they look to each other. You know what I mean?
As above, so below.
Yeah. So it's probably like that. You know, we talk about these pirates and everything, and it's probably, like, there's probably, like, this whole culture of spacefaring, you know, life out there that is very eerily similar to the pirate life. And who knows? Maybe the pirate life came from that. Yeah, we'll never know.
I think Star Trek had it right. There's probably a whole federation of different peoples out there that we don't even know about. And who knows who they all are. It would be nice to find out. I look forward to the day.
Here's an interesting sort of question I don't think I've ever asked you. Now, you wrote these books a long time ago. At the time you wrote the books, right, and then compared to today, I guess the question is, like, did you think that we would know by now? How do you feel? I mean, it's 2015, dude. I mean, I've been in this for, like, almost 15 years. I'm disgruntled that we don't know anything. Like, we haven't been told anything, I guess, is the point. I mean, you know, nothing's been solved, quote-unquote, officially. Like, what's your – and I know you're content with what you think you know, but – what do you think of the fact that we've just completely stalled out on never getting the answer from officialdom?
George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. The second Bush and Cheney were put in office, I said, well, there goes the neighborhood. It's all done. I said, if anything was going to come out, it's not now. They reclassified everything. I knew right then. And they did exactly what I thought they would do. Everything's reclassified. They've recompartmentalized everything, spread it all out. That if there was any hope of it coming out, it's gone now.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of those people that I've put forward the idea too that I think, like, they'll just, if they want to tell us now, they I think they would just like arrange for it to happen almost like all over again. Do you know what I mean? Like a UFO would crash and then they'd be like, oh, a UFO crashed. Let's see what's inside. It's an alien. You know what I mean? And be like, oh, you guys are just, now you're just trying to start the Roswell thing all over again, but control the narrative.
I'll tell you what would be really funny is if they faked the crash in order to talk about the real ones.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
You can make a movie about that. That would be funny.
Yeah. Like they fake a crash and then they can be like, okay, well, we can't cover it up anymore. There was a crash a long time ago. So, you know, who knows? I'd like to find out.
That would make
out,
a great
guess,
movie.
You know, I'd like to have at least some knowledge of what the deal is, but you know, I'm growing increasingly pessimistic as I get older that we ever will.
It'll happen when they land. When the guys upstairs decide that they want secrecy done on their end, then it is when it will come out.
Right, exactly.
And it'll be kind of like Mars Attacks, only hopefully without the ray guns and everything.
Yeah, well, I feel like something changed in the time between when the UFOs first showed up, like in the 40s, like, if, you know, obviously they were around forever, so don't email me, folks, but you know what I'm talking about, the modern UFO era. I feel like something definitely changed, you know, at some point, like in, you know, in the last, since the turn of the millennium, let's say, because it's like, this just doesn't seem like the UFOs care as much anymore, or whatever they're doing has changed, I feel. That's just my impression.
Is Bush and Cheney and going back to the secret state? Imperial Wars, the secret state, Quantum, and everything. That's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, I know, but I mean the behavior of the aliens. Like, I think maybe the aliens are like, I'm all set. Well, like, something, whatever the aliens are, whatever, you know, well, for lack of a better term now, I don't know. It could not be aliens, but you know what I mean. But whatever's behind the UFOs, I feel like it's like not as interested in people anymore, or it's doing something different. It's got something else going on.
As a matter of fact, right after we started our Imperial War business, there was a major UFO flap for a couple of days that was seen all over the eastern seaboard. And CNN and Fox News actually got up on the airwaves and said, if anyone has any knowledge on this, we really want to know because no one knows about it. The military doesn't know about it. None of the airlines know about it. We don't know what the hell it is. It's not any kind of craft. We've got pictures of it. And they showed it.
Yeah.
And they were describing the whole thing. And it was for a couple of days. And then, bam, nothing. Not a word. But you couldn't get any more visible than that.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't recall that, so I'd have to look into that one. Yeah, if you remember anything.
I remember that taking place for a couple of days. It would have been in, hold on, it was either in 2001 or early 2002.
All right, I'll check that out. Well, by the time we talk to you next, it'll be we'll have a new president. So what's your take on the election? This is kind of a fun. Maybe I'll do this for the year for going forward with the different guests. Without getting too political, because, you know, you don't want to talk politics and religion around the holidays, around the dinner table and all that. But as a detached observer, as I am, and I think you are as well, how do you see this shaping up? Because it's unlike any election I've ever seen.
Present, yeah, it's very comical. At present, there was a time that I would never have said this. But after we had a moron put in office for two different terms, all bets are off the table. We could actually hear the words President Trump. It sounds ridiculous, but it could happen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was, like everybody else, I was like, this is silly. You know, people will come to their senses. But the dude has a stranglehold here now, and it's getting even deeper and deeper into this election. And it's like, this guy hasn't fallen off yet. This is crazy. So I don't know. Like most people, like you're saying, you know, I've come to sort of like begrudgingly prepare myself for the possibility that Donald Trump really will be the president.
Well, the scary thing is he's actually the best candidate right now for the Republicans. He's the best candidate. I mean, let that sink into your head for a minute. Jeb Bush is just tripping all over his feet every time he opens his mouth. And if Jeb Bush can't even make as good a show as his moron brother, what does this tell you? There's a real problem.
Yeah.
Hillary has to be the front runner right now, and I don't think she is, actually. It's a very curious thing in the political scene. I have been sort of following it.
Yeah.
I was following it a little more closely than I am now. I kind of delve into it every now and then.
Right, right.
Or it spills into my view.
Yeah.
But every time it spills into my view, I see Trump spilling into my view. Putin meets with Trump.
Yeah,
doing it now. His people are meeting with Trump, and they're talking. They're like, what the hell? Just what the hell?
Right, right. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting what happens. I still feel like they're going to just make sure that Hillary gets in just because, like, they won't let him. I feel like the powers that be won't let him. He's too volatile. But who knows? I have no idea. I got to say, dude.
That's kind of what I wonder, too. I wonder that, too.
I never really get too concerned about things. You know, we get people on the show, or not so much our show anymore, but, you know, you listen to people in the conspiracy realm, and they're like, you know, it's the end of the world. And it's like, I never really sort of, like, felt that way, but until, like, this month. Like, with this crazy shooting, and then, you know, they're talking about, like, you know, like rounding people up and sending people here and sending people there and registering people. And like they're saying this with like a straight face and stuff. And it's like, now I'm getting a little scared, man.
And that's coming from Wesley Clark in the Democratic administration. Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming from all over the place. You know, it's like people are scared of everybody now. And it's like, oh, dude, this is not good. You know, so it's just that Paris thing really shook up the planet in a lot of ways, you know, more than I think, I even expected the night it happened. You know, the night it happened, I was like, this is pretty scary, man. That's too bad that happened. But now I'm like, oh, no, I think this was like, if 9/11 was stage one, I think fucking the Paris thing just kicked off stage two. So I don't know.
I was expecting there would be some kind of big attack somewhere. So the Paris thing does not terribly surprise me. I don't know exactly who's behind that. I mean, obviously the alt community is going nuts with trying to make it a false flag.
Yeah, yeah.
But by the same token, it fits right into, if you look at dates in the Islamic calendar and in Islamic history, they're picking these dates for very good reasons, because they're significant dates in Islamic history and Muslim history.
Right, right. But it doesn't really matter if, like, it was a false flag anyway. You play with the hand you're dealt. You know what I mean? It happened.
Yeah.
So it's what's going to happen from there? Who knows? But it's like trying to figure out who did it. You're already making the mistake that you're not anticipating what might come next instead. You know what I'm saying? You're wasting all your time trying to figure out who was behind the attack, and the next thing you know, you look up and they're taking away people on trains and stuff. It's like, oh, jeez.
Well, I tell you, 9/11 changed my world, not the way it did everyone else's. I saw exactly coming what is taking place right now, and it depressed the crap out of me. I considered becoming a career alcoholic. I'm very glad I did not, but I did very seriously consider it, because I thought, you know, it's just all over now. It's pointless to try and do anything.
Yeah.
And we're just doing the same kind of crap we did in Vietnam, only amped up to the nth degree.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, we're living in a scary world, man. I hope that things feel safer the next on next year's Rucksgiving, because right now, it's crazy right now. It's just crazy.
Yes, I fully agree with you. It's very crazy right now, and I really don't like it.
Yeah.
But I went through my depression in the year after 9/11. When that year was over, I came out of it. I said, you know what? Life goes on. We're repeating the same bullshit mistakes, and I'm just going to keep on going.
Yeah. Well, that's what we can do. That's what we do here on this show. It's what we do every year on Rucksgiving. So I think that's the best place to call it a night. We don't want people too depressed. So we'll spin it one last time into because of course Hollywood versus the aliens. What? Because I don't want to end it on that note because that's sad. What do you got cooking in your pop culture? In your pop culture purview, what have you been watching? What have you enjoyed in the last year? Good movies to recommend? Heard that Mad Max was really good, but I haven't seen it yet.
Mad Max is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
that was a good movie. Ironically, I just finished watching the first season of Black Sails last night, which I liked a lot. But the pirates in it—they're using historical pirates. A lot of the ones we were just talking about.
Yeah.
But the way that they're portraying them isn't realistic as how I know pirates. It's still a good show. Crossbones, I just watched a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that was actually pretty accurate for the most part. I was crazy about that one. And I like Black Sails. I just kind of make note that it's not entirely accurate.
Right. Okay. What about Black? What is Black Sails? What is that on? What is that on? Netflix or so? Like something? What is that on?
That's on Stars. It's Stars. A Stars series.
Okay. I get Stars. I'll have to check it out. All right. Did you get into, like, Game of Thrones or any of these other shows that are, like, really big?
I only saw the first season of Game of Thrones, and they have more of them out on disc now, so I really should rent those.
Yeah.
It's one of those that I just need to catch up with.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. I've given up on, like, any one-hour serialized drama since Lost. It's going to take a long time to get me back to invest in another show again like that.
Lost poisoned it for us all.
Yeah. Yeah.
My housemates were as crazy about Lost as we are. And they are so bitter about that show.
Yeah,
and
man.
We can't even talk about it. It's like mourning a dead friend.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I'm the same way. My buddy was, he said to me, he's like, I'm going to watch it from the beginning again. I was like, why? Why would you even do that? Like, I really bitterly hate Lost. It's so sad because I loved it so much, as you know. So it's like, so when any of these like hour-long shows come along, I'm like, it can't ever be as good as Lost, and Lost was terrible.
and Lost screwed it up.
Right, yep. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, no, I mostly watch like comedies now, so I like to laugh, as you know.
Me too. What's the last comedy I saw? Let me think. I know I saw one recently. I've seen a few, but suddenly they're just eluding my mind.
Well, it's interesting.
I watch comedies all the time.
How much entertainment's changed, too, you know, in the years. Even since we started, you know, doing this show. I think I had a TiVo at the time, and that was considered, like, you know, I was, like, preaching about this. You gotta get this TiVo thing, man, to, like, my friends. And they were like, you're crazy. Now it's like, if you don't have a DVR, you're not watching TV the right way. It's really weird.
I just rent them. I just wait till they come out and rent them.
You don't use a DVR?
I have a DVR. And I mean, I could.
It's really great.
You have it arranged on cable, that I can just, you know, pull the show in and watch it whenever I want.
Yeah. Well, that
I just never do.
That's the point too. Yeah, you can really watch like anything on demand now too. So you almost don't need the DVR because like you can just go to the thing's go to the channel's website. You can watch it. Chances are, or you can get it on demand through your cable. It's like you can just watch I saw an interesting article this week that was like they're not even canceling shows now anymore. right away. Like they used to, you know, like a show would come on, they'd cancel it after like two episodes. Now it's like they let them run for a long time because they're like, we don't know necessarily if people are watching it yet. So.
Well, that's just it. The Nielsens are pointless anymore. They mean nothing. Because people watch it. They like the show and they watch it, but they're not going to watch it when it airs.
Yeah.
So they really have to come up with some kind of different system to figure out what's working and what isn't, because the Nielsens are meaningless anymore.
Right, exactly. And because people – and they got to figure out how to, like, make advertisements work, because that's what pays for all this shit. And, like, no one's watching the commercials because they don't have to. It's like, well, how are we going to pay for this? It's a – Yeah,
yep.
Entertainment's in a real weird bind right now.
Yeah, that's why I wait for it on disc. Like, I love to watch. I'm a real true crime addict. I love it. I always have. There's a station.
ID?
I call it the murder porn station. Yes.
I
call it the murder
porn
station. I know
all about ID. I call it the murder show channel, so we're on the same page. Yeah.
I love that channel. It is so crammed with commercials.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't stand it. That, you know, you can barely watch the damn show. So I've almost reached the point with that I just want to wait until they maybe put out on disc and rent them.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They always – and the funny part, too, is it's like, oh, there's always commercials for, like, the other shows. So, like, if you watch for, like, a couple hours, after a while, you're like, there's the Swamp Murders show again. You know, it's like you know the commercial. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they keep repeating them. A lot of them show up on Lifetime Network, too, amazingly enough. They run some of the shows that used to be on ID on Lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I read earlier in the year that this ID channel is like explode. It's like one of the most popular channels out there now. So it's like,
oh, it's fantastic.
People are really into it. Yeah, yeah. It's good.
It is fantastic.
You can turn it on at any time and you get sucked into some weird true crime mystery. It's great.
My significant other, before she died, she was crazy about true crime. Just like me. We used to trade books back and forth, true crime books, like they were trading cards.
Yeah.
If that show, if she were still alive, we would never get out of bed. Watch the murder porn channel all day.
Yeah.
And eat popcorn and have sex. That's all we would do.
I'm sure there's a lot of people doing that right now. So.
Yep, they probably are. I'm sure they're having a ball.
Well, I'm glad they took the time out to listen to this year's Ruxgiving special. How's that for a segue? Bruce, I can't thank you enough for doing this once again. I know you enjoy it, so it's not like I was pulling teeth here. And really, I really am thrilled that this pirate thing came off without a hitch, because it turned into such a compelling conversation, and I learned a lot, and I think the listeners are really going to be riveted by all the pirate talk this year. So thank you so much for bringing the goods, man.
It is always a pleasure, and I look forward to it again.
All right, buddy. Don't hang up. I'm gonna say goodnight to the callers, and then you and I can just do a little brief momentary chat after the show.
Cool.
Two of us. So stay tuned. Stay on the line, I guess is what they say.
Yeah, okay.
All right, folks. That was our good friend Bruce Rux. Thank you once again to Bruce for coming on the show and making Ruxgiving a happening here in 2015. If you don't, as I said earlier, if you're just discovering Banal of America somehow and you've crashed our Thanksgiving dinner, thank you for checking out the show. And you can find out more from us at banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. And you can also find us on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America. I was just thinking to myself, Bruce, you're still here. How come you're not on Facebook, dude? Is this too crazy for you?
No, my only problem with Facebook is its contract. Anything you put on Facebook is owned by Facebook, which means you got to be really careful anything you put on there. That actually bothers me. It's the only reason I haven't gone on.
Okay. Are you sure about that? I think that's like an urban legend or something. I don't know. I mean, you're probably
right.
Yeah, okay.
I read the contract. It's all fine print stuff. I read down through the contract, and I got to that part of it, and I said, yep, that's the one right there.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it. Hopefully they don't all – I'm just going to keep pretending like I own my shit so they can kiss my butt. You can – why I censored –
I would sell a hell of a lot more books.
Shit, I don't know. What's that?
I would sell a hell of a lot more books if I got on Facebook. I can tell you that.
Well, first you got to get the book back out. So maybe once you get
the book
back out,
back
you can
out.
Join up and just as an author page you could do.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. But back to what I was saying, if you want more from Banal of America, just punch in Banal of America on Facebook. That'll bring up the page. That's where we post the latest news on the show, what the next episode is, all that good stuff. If you're listening to the show by now, you know that we have a massive archive, 250-plus episodes. You can find them all via Banal of America, and you can find them. They are absolutely free. And we do that via the help from the BOA listeners who make donations. There's two ways to do so. Head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, there's also a P.O. Box address at Banal of America. Find that and fire your correspondence my way via the old-fashioned way, snail mail. And as we say all the time here at the end of the program, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, commercial-free and freely available to all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Now, as I said a couple times here during the show, it's been a month since I last did an episode, and I'm really thrilled we got Bruce to come on for Ruxgiving, help me sort of get my sea legs back under me. See that, folks? I did a little pirate pun there. And I hope that we can do a few more shows in December. I know for sure, well, I can't say for sure, but I'm willing to bet good money that we'll have the annual holiday special. We're talking the 11th year here with the incomparable Stan Friedman. I'm going to get on the horn with Stan probably this weekend and schedule it, because I'd like to get in touch with him right after Thanksgiving. And hopefully a couple more episodes in the mix there. I got a few folks I've reached out to, some folks who've been on the show before and some newcomers, and hopefully we can get them on the program and get back into a little bit of a rhythm here. I think tonight's episode is 820-something. So we're nearing the end of the season here. 927. Yeah, we're at episode 927. So really, we only have six shows left before we close out season 9. So it's going to come faster than even I imagined. And stay tuned, folks, because we got some good folks lined up to close out the season. And then, of course, the big one, season 10. Can't wait for that. That's going to be sometime in 2016. So, as usual, I can't tell you much, but we're going to have some awesome shows. So stay tuned to Banal of America and Banal of America on Facebook for information on what those shows will be and when you can hear them and how you can hear them and all that good stuff. And so, with all that said, thank you so much, folks, for tuning in to another Ruxgiving Spectacular. Thank you to the mighty Bruce Rux for joining us and helping keep the tradition alive. I hope everybody out there listening has an absolutely fantastic Thanksgiving. It really is one of my favorite holidays. It might be my favorite holiday. There's too much pressure with Christmas. It's too stressful. I always feel like I need to do more for Christmas. It's crazy. So that's what I like about Thanksgiving. You just kick back, eat some good food, watch some good TV, see old friends, have a few beers, have a good time. It's very celebratory. And give thanks. You know, thank you to all you folks out there for listening. Thank you for your enduring support of this program. It really is tremendously appreciated. As I said, we've been kind of missing in action for the last month, but it's for good reason. We got a lot cooking here at BOA HQ that hopefully will kind of start to make itself apparent in the next few weeks and months. And I think it's going to be very, very exciting for everybody listening and all the folks out there who are BOA fans. So with all that said, once again, I hope everybody out there has a fantastic Thanksgiving. Thank you for your support of the program. Thank you for making BOA Audio part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.